Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back.
In the Ring Radio Network, I am your co-host, Steve Canine Kim, joined as always from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, sir. How are you doing? I hear you've tore down Omaha.
Yes, Omaha was a great city. We got to talk about that. What a big weekend, not only for Terrence Crawford, but that great little town in the city of Omaha, in the Cornhusker State of Nebraska. If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a question via Twitter, you could do so at SteveMaxBoxing or at Gabriel_Montoya. But let's get started with round number one from the CenturyLink Center in Omaha, Nebraska. It was a breakout performance for the WBO lightweight titleist, Terrence Bud Crawford, with an impressive 9-round dismantling over Cuban Yuri Gamboa. Crawford goes to 24-0, scoring his 17th knockout. Gamboa suffers his first loss in years. He now drops to 23-1. The HBO opener had Matvey Korobov with a 10-round decision over Jose Uzcategui. Gabe, Terrence Crawford, I thought this was a revelation because we all thought he could win. We all thought he'd probably do it by boxing. But the way he did it, he didn't put just a period at the end of the sentence. He put an exclamation mark. I think this was not just a home run for Bud Crawford. Gabe, I think it was a grand slam.
Yeah, it was like welcome to a new franchise, potentially, you know. Sold very well in his hometown, a little over 10,000 folks, 10,000 and change. Probably seemed like it wasn't, you know, papered. I bet you they really sold some serious tickets there. And the fight itself, you know, it's rare to get it where, you know, the things are so meaningful. Gamboa's kind of fighting for his career, fighting for his TV package or his legitimacy, 50 Cent. And Crawford is proving, you know, he's fighting the most dangerous fight of all, the big title defense in your hometown. Even, you know, walked along the ledge bringing in a rapper with him, which is sometimes a kiss of death for a guy. But, you know, the fight itself, what substance he had. You know, he switched to the southpaw stance after losing pretty much, you know, the first three rounds. I thought HBO overstated, you know, Max Kellerman as usual, saying he was outclassed. I think he was just on this level for the first time and seeing it, not taking too many chances so he doesn't blow it in the first three rounds. And we knew about Gamboa. He is who we thought he was. He's a front runner. Not very creative, not much of a ring IQ. Once he can't hurt you, he runs completely out of ideas, and he doesn't really have all the skills and tools needed to succeed at the top level. Terrence Crawford, on the other hand, he has all that and then some, man. The switch to southpaw was brilliant in the fourth round, so much so that Roy Jones changed his mind late in the fight and decided that he was as good at it as anybody he's seen since Marvin Hagler. And the power's there. Everything was there. He just got better as the fight went on. It's exactly, like you said, a grand slam. It's what you want to see out of a guy in this kind of a fight.
Gabe, I said this in the past about Gamboa. The Cyclone is a great athlete. He's very explosive, very fast, but he's a bit of a sprinter. And he's more Usain Bolt than Edwin Moses. And Yuri Gamboa in the first three and a half rounds, I don't know if he was dominating the fight, but his quickness and his speed was allowing him to beat Terrence Crawford to the punch. And you got to the point where saying, will Crawford make an adjustment? And he didn't more than just make an adjustment. He adapted. And literally you saw different assets to his game, different facets to what he could do, going southpaw, running him into that right hook, which was the key moment in that fight. And from the fifth round on, when he hit the deck, it literally was a different fight, and you literally saw Terrence Crawford grow in stature. Well, Gamboa, I said this on Twitter, right around the fifth, sixth, seventh round, he's running out of steam and he's running out of ideas. And one of the factors I thought in this fight coming in, they were both 23-0, Gabe. They couldn't have been any more different because just looking at the activity, the career momentum, and we have to, listen, I don't want to throw water on this flame, because I think Terrence Crawford deserves all the credit in the world, and I think he took a monumental step up in his career. But we have to mention this. We have to be fair. Yuri Gamboa not only been inactive, but, Gabe, let's be very honest about it. They look like two different weight classes in there, and I think it's fair to say that Yuri Gamboa's most optimum weight is not 135.
I think that's fair, you know, although, yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, you could say that. I mean, it's he hasn't had a big one there, and he's kind of a weird guy. He's kind of a tweener, you know, physically. He's got those short arms, but he's got a big body. You know, he's, you know, muscular. He's got power. He was able to buzz Crawford in the ninth round. I think a lot of it is just development. He's had a herky-jerky career with long layoffs. But I also just kind of wonder about him. You know, the layoffs are his doing, and the fights that he's kind of walked away from and the reasoning don't make a lot of sense to me. It's I don't have a lot of sympathy for him when it was all over. I just want to box. Well, you haven't really been thinking that way, you know? But, I mean, he's a viable guy. I just don't – I've never been big on him. I'm not going to, you know, just beat him down while he's having a loss, but – I've just never really seen the hype, and maybe at 130, I guess he would have more of a physical advantage. He'd probably do better at 126. I'd like to see it, but I don't know. His power carried up, and physically he was able to kind of stay in there for a while. I mean, I don't know. If you're his advisor, do you make him shave the pounds? You think he can shave the pounds?
That's an interesting one. Yuri Gamboa, I thought one of the issues why he couldn't stay at a more natural weight that's more conducive to his size, and specifically his arms. He is like a T-Rex. He does not have a lot of length. He's got that really big muscular torso, but you could just see that the reach is not there, and the way he jumps in, literally jumps in, and you said this 4 or 5 years ago, he's a knockout waiting to happen, and Terrence Crawford was brilliant leading him into that right hook that he never saw coming. I've always said about Gamboa, he was a product of early hype where we all thought he looked spectacular. But when it was all said and done, as he leveled out at the world-class level, it was more sizzle than steak. And him getting drilled to the canvas 4 times is not a surprise, given the fact that Michael Farinas, Roger Speedy Gonzalez, among others, who aren't exactly Alexis Arguello in terms of power, were able to floor him. But with that being said, I think Terrence Crawford, I think he should send a thank you note to Mikey Garcia. And because without Mikey Garcia's decision to go to litigation with Top Rank eschew this matchup, you know, like I said last week in one of my columns, Gabe, next man up. Because if you don't take this opportunity, Gabe, there's always young men like Terrence Crawford who are willing and able.
Absolutely, and not only that, but, you know, Mikey wasn't exactly – they were building him strange. They kept taking him back east. You're not really building a draw, and he doesn't have the most exciting style on the planet to begin with. And he started making demands like, I need this, I need that, I need to be valued more, you know, when you haven't really brought something to the table that everybody absolutely needs. Yeah, next man up. You know, Crawford's engaging. Mikey Garcia is a pretty engaging, intelligent guy, but I think the style combined with his winning smile and obviously how much his home state just loves the guy, he's the real deal, Terrence Crawford. It's nice to see a good guy do well. But let me ask you something. I've been wondering, you know, because Darley Perez lost a decision to Gamboa last June, and then he just picked up a WBA world lightweight title. So does that win kind of gain for Gamboa? It's the argument that he's not really a lightweight?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I hate to retroactively give credit, because let's face it, when he beat Darley Perez last year, a guy that I was pretty familiar with, because he fights out here on the club circuit with Thompson Boxing, and we had seen him on at the ESPN level, we never said to ourselves, you know, that's a great resume-building win for Yuri Gamboa. Let's see how Darley Perez does with this title. And again, I'm not a guy that believes in linear titles or having one champion per division, but we have to be honest about it. Having a belt today is devalued in a lot of ways because there is a certain amount of dilution. Gabe, the thing that I loved about this event and being out there in Omaha, which is just a gem of a little city, and I'll say to any boxing fan that goes out there, travels to fights, first of all, God bless you guys. You guys are great. You guys are the guys that keep the business going. Put Omaha with the Terrence Crawford fight on your bucket list. You'll have a great time. The atmosphere was amazing. Gabe, the official attendance was just under 11,000, and it felt like 20,000. There was an electricity. There was a buzz. and it was thunderous at times. And I think what Terrence Crawford is to Omaha is very similar to Johnny Cappy in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Virgil Hill in Bismarck, Joe Messi in Buffalo. And these events and these cities and these markets are important because for the past 35, 40 years, we've lost the flyover states. There used to be a time a lot of states and cities that are no longer associated with boxing, if you look it up, they used to have boxing on a regular basis, and they drew well. And I think Terrence Crawford, not saying he's a superstar, not saying he's a future pay-per-view guy, but again, there's no doubt about it. Terrence Crawford is now an important fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. When you can bring it on that kind of level, you know, economically, let's see how he does in the ratings. But I think, you know, this is kind of, we're slowly building. It was a very exciting fight. So if HBO subscribers caught it, you know, the ones that are kind of the casual guys, but like love having that addition of boxing to their channel. You know, I think this guy could be good. I mean, he's, but you know, at the same time, we looked at Kelly Pavlik the same way. And it's about how you defend the title and hold things together. You know, we felt that about Devin Alexander in St. Louis, and that kind of went sour. So I'd like to see, you know, I know Todd DeBuff wants to bring Crawford back. He, you know, and I think they should. They just keep developing it. And you look down the road, I know they've mentioned Pacquiao, but that's good promoting, just mentioning that guy, you know, Crawford, your new guy that is on everybody's mind right now with a Pacquiao. But you're looking down the road. You're looking, you know, sometime in 2015, maybe the second fight as you build towards it. I think his frame could take 140. I think Pacquiao at 140 could be very explosive. It's a fun fight. I just think all positive signs right now, you know. I'm not going to crown him just yet, but, boy, he looks promising.
Gabe, the best thing about this weekend and hanging out at the Fight Hotel, which is the Omaha Hilton, which is great because it actually has a bridge that connects to the house of Doug McDermott, and I mean because that is the basketball home of Creighton, is that there's a community of boxing people that are all there. Fans were congregating, and I met guys from Iowa, Chicago, and other states. They said, Steve, we had never really gone to a championship-level fight. So this market is important, and I give Terrence Crawford a lot of credit. When this event was first thought about, they were actually talking about taking this across the border to a city called Council Bluffs, Iowa, at a casino where everyone would have made more money. But Crawford himself said, wait a minute, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. I think he knew from a psychological standpoint, people in Nebraska want events in their border. And there was a certain excitement about this fight because you'd go around to the various restaurants, you'd go to the store and buy something, and you'd mention the fight. Everyone seemed to know about it. Now, I'm not saying that he's as popular as the Nebraska Cornhuskers or even Creighton basketball, but I do think he has certainly created his own niche as a mini franchise for the time being in Omaha, Nebraska. Gabe, Matt Korobov. I guess I don't even know what to say except he keeps winning.
Yeah, that's about it. You know, he's there. He's a guy. But, you know, it's systematic. It's not the most exciting thing. It's almost like Rigo if he finished fights more often, you know, instead of going the rounds. I kind of looked at him, and he gets hit a bit. He gasses a bit. I think he's learning how to manage that. But it's not, yeah, it's just not scintillating. At the same time, he's very intelligent, and the fact that he's looking at Triple G as a goal, and he's been in there and felt what he's about before. Granted, it was the amateurs, but this is a guy he's looking at and wanting a piece of. It's an interesting fight if he's not always an interesting performer or the most scintillating guy. He had a tough style in front of him, though. The guy that wasn't particularly willing, was a little tricky, didn't have a lot of power, but he did have a lot of just kind of weirdness. I mean, he'd switch sides and kind of pop out a little, you know, lead right. Nobody had really ever seen the guy before. We couldn't find any tape on him. So I thought Korobov did the intelligent thing, which was take his time and let his power kind of slowly find its way in the fight. And it did, you know, but it didn't really make anybody want to come back. But it's also kind of hard. That fight leading up to the main event, I don't know how many fights were before that, but in that atmosphere where everybody's just like, let's get to the big fight, it was a little rough for him. You could hear the boo birds. I'm sure HBO turned them down a bit.
You know, in the middle of the third round, when I'm hearing the cat calls and the boos, I'm saying, boy, these people from Omaha are becoming really seasoned, hardened boxing fans. That's a quick learning curve. Here's the thing about Korobov. I think he's almost a slave to the own expectations that were placed upon him, because he had a monster, I mean a monster amateur run. I'm not saying it was quite like Lomachenko or Golovkin, but I remember when Cameron Duncan signed him and Top Rank signed him to a promotional pack, they had big hopes. And I just get the sense that maybe he peaked as a very good amateur that's good enough to fight for a title. Now, with the victory over Uzkatagwe, who he finished off in the seventh with two knockdowns, and he ended up going the distance, he's in line, not for Golovkin. I don't know why HBO pushed that storyline. I don't think for one moment that Top Rank or Cameron Duncan had any designs, even if they looked impressive, of taking on Gennady Golovkin, because this fight was for one of those regional trinkets with the WBO and a belt by the held by the man by the name of Kid Chocolate and Peter Quillen. Gabe, I think as mediocre as Khorovov has been through many of his fights, where he's not been scintillating, I do think this big, strong, rugged guy. He's still a southpaw. I think he stands at least a 40% chance of beating Peter Quillen.
Oh, at least. I like him in that fight. I mean, I think.
Oh, you're kind of my favorite.
I think it's closer to a pick'em, but yeah, I would lean towards Khorovov in the fight. I think he's a smarter fighter. I think his power is real. He gasses a bit, but he's the kind of guy that he will kind of slowly take his time to get to you and kind of almost leave you alone if you leave him alone and just be content to box. But if you press him and you're aggressive with him, as I think Quillen would try to be, who's got kind of like a questionable chin, I think. That could be spell problems for Quillen. I think he's defensively irresponsible. And while Khorovov gets hit, it's not like he gets wobbled and knocked all over the place. I kind of would like him in the fight. I think he's got a high ring IQ, and I'm not sure how much of that, how high Peter Quillen is.
The one real problem I have with Khorovov, he's like that car on a one-lane highway when you're out in the middle of nowhere, like coming back from Vegas to L.A., and there's only like one or two lanes. And you see that one car, right, and you're in a rush to get home, right? You want to catch that 1 o'clock NFL game in L.A., and this car is just sitting there at 60 miles per hour. Now, you come up on it, you flash the headlights, and they just stay at 60 miles per hour. He does not shift gears. And it's just so monotone. It's just so methodical. There's no explosion. He just kind of keeps grinding away methodically. Khorovov can fight. He's good, but I just get the sense. Maybe he's one of these guys, like a lot of Cubans. Perhaps he stayed amateur just a little bit too long. But I don't think there's any doubt. His strength, and he does have some power, and he is pretty solid. He won't be intimidated. Guys like that, I think, would give Peter Quillen problems. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. A couple minutes from now, we will take your calls. We'll go through some news and notes here. Gabe, the big story late last week, Dan Rayfield broke this. Golden Boy is suing in an arbitration Richard Schaefer, their former CEO, for $50 million. Unfortunately, being an arbitration, I heard there is no public case filing. Gabe, I've said this from the beginning. When you hire Bertram Fields, you're not going out there to shake hands. You're going out there to ball your fists and get ready for a street fight. This is exactly what we have.
Yeah, this is going to be all-out war. And I think you already kind of saw it. I mean, I could be wrong, but those pictures being leaked of Oscar, the new ones, I just have a feeling, I kind of just wonder who it was that leaked it to the press. I think it's going to get mudslinging like that. I think it already has. I think Oscar's got a good case. I mean, I think while it's sealed and everything because of the arbitration, I think we all know what we're talking about. They built allegedly a Trojan horse company where they weren't signing talent to Golden Boy, but Al Haymon was signing them all and continues to in the business, kind of undercutting everybody else and just signing up all the talent somehow. And not signing him to Golden Boy, but promoting them on Golden Boy cards. He's been doing that with a lot of guys for many years. It's been that open secret of, we're with Al, really, but we say we're with Ludabella, or we say we're with Dan Goosen, but there's no paper. And that was the deal here. And when you're the CEO, you can't allow that to happen. It's fiduciary responsibility. So I think it's a very winnable case from that aspect for Oscar. I think the writing's on the wall. I'm just $50 million. Wow.
Gabe,
where'd that number come from?
My understanding is, number one, it's a nice round number. And if you do $5 million, it gets kind of a headline. You put that zero on the right side, it gets a real headline. That gets people's attentions. And I believe, and what I've been told, is that they are basically trying to force Schaefer into a settlement where he can no longer be in the boxing business and therefore not be the front man for one Al Haymon. I believe that is the end game. And another interesting development, and this is not unexpected, but a couple of Schaefer's lieutenants at Golden Boy have been fired by Oscar De La Hoya. Dan Rayfield had that story today. That's not a surprise. I think everyone's been expecting that. But you know, when it's all said and done, a lot of people on Twitter talking about what that really means. Well, number one, Gabe, what it means is that De La Hoya is certainly here to stay. He's back in charge. But, Gabe, doesn't it all come down to this? Oscar has to deal, or how's he going to deal with the dynamic of Al Haymon and his clients? And will he eventually make the fights with or without Top Rank that we want to see? To me, that's what it all comes down to. I don't necessarily care who's in the offices of Golden Boy. I want to see what Oscar De La Hoya does in terms of keeping up his promises to the public of making the fights we want to see.
And cleaning up boxing. I'm not going to forget that that's what he said he wanted to do.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that. You know, but I mean, there's certainly ways he could do it. You know, there's a few things I'm kind of working on that they had talked about in the past and then kind of left it. And I think now that Schaefer's gone, there's certain things that were being obstructed that I think will not be. And I think that the fights, you know, I think Oscar's whole thing, his whole idea was to have fights like his career where he fought everybody. The fights were exciting because, you know, they were well-matched action fights. I can't really think of many fights of his that were not exciting. It's the Hopkins fight stands out to me, but that really wasn't his fault. Even the Fat Elvis version of Oscar against Felix Sturm, that was exciting because you'd never seen him in that kind of shape and at that weight. You know, it had a lot of tension to it, and it was action. So I think he will make the fights, and I think if it opens up so that he can work with Bob Arum to keep his company going, that model has worked, working with other promoters. Bob Arum and Don King certainly did it. I mean, not all the time, but it happens. It can only be good for the sport. The thing that's going to be key is, what does his roster look like? We still don't quite know that. And also, if they do make my dreams come true and make sure that Richard Schaefer never returns to boxing, is he going to be able to work with Al Haymon? That's going to be interesting. You know, is Oscar and Al, are they going to work out some kind of deal? That's really the key there. I think it's all going to work out. I think Richard's going to be out. That's my early prediction.
I think July 12th has major ramifications, not just on the junior middleweight division, even though that fight's at 155. This is about Oscar De La Hoya's company having a legitimate, viable pay-per-view franchise. Canelo wins against Lara. That's a respected win, no matter what anyone thinks of Lara. That's a solid guy to have on your resume. I don't know how it does business-wise. Also the fact that Lara's one of these Haymon guys who makes it clear, I'm not with Golden Boy. I'm with Al Haymon. There are so many interesting sidelights to that fight because Golden Boy, you know, I get the sense Danny Garcia, Adrian Broner, Gary Russell, all these other guys, yeah, they're interesting chess pieces, but you know what? If you lose them, if you have a Canelo that could come up big on July 12th, those losses become a lot easier to take than, let's say, Lara just boxing circles around Canelo Alvarez. Folks, let's hit the phone lines now. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's on the line?
Let's pull somebody up. That's very true. That model also works, having that tentpole fighter. You know, the old ways sometimes are the best ways. In the 760, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what up, guys? Julio, what's going on?
Julio, welcome to the next round.
Hey, thanks a lot. I got two questions for you. First of all, Steve, I saw that you posted on Twitter. How realistic is the Cotto Bradley bull that is supposed to be in talks?
Well, I have heard that rumor being written about before, and David Duenes of the Leave It in the Ring radio network, our fearless leader, he says that he's heard Tim Bradley's been offered that fight at 156. Now, oftentimes where there's smoke, there is fire. Do I believe that fight has been discussed? Yes. Do I think it's a done deal? I think far from it. However, let's say it happens. I think this is a very tough sell, guys. First of all, Tim Bradley wasn't a good puncher at 140. He's not a very good puncher at 147. He's an excellent little boxer, great competitor. Now you're going to move him up to some catch weight at middleweight at 156. My point is this. There are other fights to make. You're the middleweight champion, and that's fine if you don't want to fight there. But can't he at least take on a legitimate 154-pounder? To me, this matchup reeks of just top incest, that Bob Arum is just matching up two of his clients.
And not only that,
yeah,
guys,
I just don't see it happening. I don't think it's a good fight for Bradley, particularly at the weight. You know, as Dave pointed out, the worry possibly is that Cotto's going to blow up. I think Bradley, after the long road he's had it, he deserves to rebuild a little bit, you know, take a little bit of a break. It's been big fight after big fight. You know, and for Cotto, I mean, I think it's a great fight. Everything's great for Cotto in this scenario, but none of it is good for Tim Bradley.
Julio, what's your other question?
My other question is, what do you guys see realistically for Pacquiao next? Because it seems like Bob Arum said, you know, he has all these options now with him being buddy-buddy with Oscar, but in reality, it looks like his options are really, really limited. So I was wondering what you guys think.
Gabe, I got to be honest with you. I don't know what is realistic. I don't even know what's economically viable. I believe right now that the end game is now clear, that they both hit a wall, Mayweather and Pacquiao, that they are these two pay-per-view franchises who circled each other, found ways not to face each other, but could exist in parallel universes while they're pumping out money like an ATM. Gabe, I think now the jig is up.
Yeah, that's an accurate description. Let me pull out of this for a second. I've got a bit of a call. We need to move to somebody else, but I've got kind of a strange call I have to take with Fast Steve on the other line. Can we pull up another caller? I'm sorry.
Sure, absolutely.
But thanks for the call, man. We're going to move on to another one. Stay tuned each week. Appreciate it. In the 954, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. It's Sean from Gainesville.
Hello. Who is this?
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, Steve. Sean from Gainesville.
Sean from Gainesville. Now, where have you been the last couple of weeks?
I've been busy. I picked up a second job working nights. So.
We all got to pay bills, Sean. So what's going on?
Not a hell of a lot. How you doing, Steve? It's been a while. Yeah. So listen, 50 million, man. I find it to be a really interesting situation because I don't have a lot of sympathy for Oscar here. You know, you can only get screwed over if you let someone screw you over, you know, and I know Richard was a very bad boy over the last year or two. But, you know, I mean, this is kind of what you get when you trust your money and your business to other people. You know what I mean?
I think there's two ways to look at it. Was Oscar negligent because he was, in essence, an absentee owner and a liability and an embarrassment publicly to his company? Absolutely. However, Sean, with that being said, the term fiduciary responsibility or duty clearly outlines that as a CEO of a company, none of that matters. You still have a certain job to do. And the question is going to be asked, I think, in his arbitration, was Richard Schaefer acting in the best interest of Golden Boy Promotions and Oscar De La Hoya or Al Haymon?
Yeah, I think we all know what went on there. You know, Richard was not very good for Oscar. But anyway, I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think about this whole? Have you guys seen the drug testing program that Nevada is doing now? Have you caught any wind of that?
No, I think Gabe is okay. Gabe, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been following it. What was your question?
Gabe, your boy Chael Sonnen pumping out a lot of BS in the press. Did you see what he tested positive for?
Well, yeah, he's been. Yeah, I was actually on the Brian Kenny show this morning talking about it. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it goes back to kind of an old phrase, and I don't want to turn it to the drug testing hour. But once you start taking drugs, this is what somebody told me along the way. Once you start taking performance enhancing drugs, you become a liar. And Chael Sonnen tested positive with a high ratio, like a TE ratio at 17 to 1, back in 2010. And he lied to the California Commission, said Keith Kaiser gave him permission, which wasn't true, and he got called on it, got a suspension. And the UFC has just continued to give this guy a pass. But I don't want to get into trophy hunting. I think the drug problem is very real, and I think the fact that the guy finally tested positive for EPO and HGH, and HGH isn't really the big one. EPO, in a sport where energy is the most precious thing, and if you don't get tired and the other guy does, you could seriously damage him. I'm telling you, the drug is probably the best drug for a combat sports athlete, and it's rampant. And I think that guy has been a poster child for it. They shouldn't allow him to be a Fox Sports analyst. I think all he is has been a poster for drug use in combat sports. And he's certainly been disingenuous with the public. So as far as the NSAC, I've got some stuff I'm writing on that. I wonder – you know, you have to – all these groups, USADA, IVADA, policies, procedures, and you got to let the guys know. You have to have those published, and you have to let the athletes know that they're part of a program. What NSAC's attempting to do is ape VADA, but without doing it the right way. They're just kind of acting arbitrarily from what I understand. So I'm kind of concerned what they're doing, but there you go.
Yeah,
there's a little primer on that.
I think it's pretty obvious at this point that politics are not going to let VADA – really be any sort of real entity, you know, like in Vegas or anything like that. It seems like they've been cut out of the situation. But for me, I'm just happy that no matter how, insufficient the test might be, I mean, they finally did some random testing and Tail Sun and Pops for, what, four substances and two tests? I mean, it's just kind of funny. And I don't know, at least, you know, they're starting somewhere, so... there's that, you know what I mean?
I wouldn't count VADA out. And, yeah, he is the first guy to officially be caught for HGH, first fighter, and EPO. Shane Mosley did it, but he didn't get caught. He just admitted to it and then later BS'd about it.
Sean, is there anything else we could help you with?
Yeah, last thing. You know, there's so much talk about pay-per-view numbers. You know, Steve, you were just talking about a couple of minutes ago with Pacquiao and Mayweather, but I feel like Mayweather's numbers have gone down a lot because he's fighting more frequently now, you know? It's like a couple of years ago, he's only fighting one time a year. There was more anticipation and stuff like that. But you know, more so, I just feel like the entire pay-per-view market is pretty much going dwindling, you know, like pretty slowly. I mean, this past weekend, a lot of my friends, like I spoke to three or four people that watched the fight and don't subscribe to HBO and streamed it. You know, it wasn't even a pay-per-view. So I just think there's a lot of that going on.
Well, moving towards that, the KOTO numbers were very disappointing. They did right around 300 to 350, and the expectation was to do at least four, maybe five. But, you know, I was talking to some people within the industry, and I asked, what happened? Is the market depressed, as the way Bob Arum describes it? And I think there's certainly a market saturation. I just don't agree with boxing having more than four or five major pay-per-view events a year. We're going to have at least eight or nine in 2014. I wish boxing was that good where we had eight or nine legitimate major pay-per-view events. But a lot of the times, these fights are put on this platform because the guaranteed minimums cannot be satisfied on HBO or Showtime. That's just the reality. But you go to the Cotto Martinez number, I think a lot of things happened that conspired against it that was the perfect storm. First of all, you had the Belmont Stakes where a triple crown was on the line. So you're taking away some media coverage. Then the National Hockey League had the Stanley Cup. Now, if it's one thing if it was the Vancouver Canucks and the Winnipeg Jets or the Quebec Nordiques, if they even exist, but when you had L.A. and New York involved, and I was told those two markets combined for about one-third of your pay-per-view buys for these major shows, and then also you had the NBA Finals going on where LeBron James cramping up with his big story. So all of those things conspire to actually shave off pay-per-view buys. But also, as you mentioned, Sean, when you're asking people to make their cable bills go up above $175, $200, people will find other means to watch the fights.
Hey, guys, I'll leave you with this. I am going to purchase the Canelo Lara because I feel like it's a real fight, you know, and I like Canelo. I think he's going to break future. I like his attitude. So I'm gonna buy that one.
Sean, let me ask you this. Did you buy Cotto Martinez?
No, I streamed it.
You listened on the radio. Come on, don't incriminate yourself. You listened on the radio.
Tomato, potato, you feel me, see it?
All right. Sean, thanks for the call.
Have a good one, guys.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
In the 505, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good. Who is this?
This is Steve from Albuquerque.
Steve, how are you? Welcome to the next round.
Hey, doing pretty good. I didn't get a chance to talk to you guys last week, but I wanted to say how disappointed I was that those rumors of Steve taking the defensive coordinator job for my Canes was untrue.
Hey, give Mark D'Onofrio one more year. We actually have improved the front seven. Just give him one more year. That's all I ask.
Well, I'm going to try to move on because I don't want to start sobbing on your show. So,
please don't.
No, I have a couple things. The first one was, what's the deal with Leo Santa Cruz right now? I mean, is Quick going to happen, or, like, what's going on?
Steve, I don't think the Quick fight's going to happen next. That's the indication that I'm getting. And I was able to speak to Leo real quickly at the fights at the Home Depot Center a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him what's next. He says, I'm either going to fight in August or September. And Gabe, Steve, this is what's disappointing. A couple of years ago, his rise to prominence happened on activity, being busy, fighting more than twice a year, and unfortunately now he's become that Heyman fighter that makes a lot of money that fights twice a year. That's what we've come to with Leo Santa Cruz.
Yeah. So
yeah. Go ahead. I'm just. Strange. Yeah. All these guys are, the only time you see them on TV anymore is when they cut away to them in the crowd. I don't understand it. But I think a lot of this is indicative of, it's not just the two-time-a-year Heyman guys, but what the hell was really going on at Golden Boy and Schaefer and that Heyman, you know, trinity there. You know, who was really running it and who was really pushing what agendas? You kind of see the wheels kind of grind to a halt. And with today's axing, they're kind of starting back up again. Like as you said, I mean, that July 12th date could not be more important. So to see where these careers are going, who wants to be with Oscar. If Canelo wins, suddenly he's the pretty girl in the room again.
Steve, anything else?
Yeah, so with this Martinez-Frampton fight, which I really love, like I'm actually real excited for that, do you think Quigg would take the winner of that fight then? Or, because, yeah, I was hoping that we would get a Santa Cruz-Quigg fight, and then we'd have this Martinez-Frampton fight, and it would be like a little mini tournament, so to speak. You know, it'd just be the winners, you know, fought each other next. But is that, you know, do you see even Quigg getting the winner of that fight?
Steve, that's a perfect world that we certainly don't live in. It'd be an unbelievable scenario, but obviously this is not utopia, the business of boxing. You know, I've covered this situation a little bit because I know Joe Gallagher. He comes once a year to the wild card with all his boys, Scott Quigg included, and I'm a big Scott Quigg fan. It seems to me, Gabe, that Quigg against Carl Frampton is kind of like a miniature version of Pacquiao Mayweather. There seems to be a lot of promotional and managerial politics that are going to keep this fight from happening when it should. That's the feeling that I get right now.
Yeah, maybe they'll meet at a higher weight. I don't know. I mean, you got two guys that are probably doing pretty well as independent businesses. You got to always do that risk reward. You know, do we put those businesses together now, and one of them's going to lose, and one of them's going to go on to bigger and better things? The timing is right. I don't think they're not quite at the Pacquiao Mayweather phase yet because they're not, you know, so long in the tooth. You know. You know, Pacquiao and Mayweather were right there at the apex. They were right there at the top of the hill before they start rolling down it or cruising down it, you know, in Mayweather's case. This fight, I still have faith that it could happen.
Steve, is there anything else we could do for you?
Yeah, one real quick thing. Realistically now, with this whole, you know, Golden Boy, Heyman drama, what do you guys realistically see happening with Floyd? You know, do you think now... I don't think he's going to get that September 13th date. Do you think we're going to be back to this Floyd's not going to fight for over a year now while they're trying to sort this whole thing out? Like,
Steve, I've said this for a while. Do you think a guy named Money is going to turn down three more fights where he's guaranteed $31 million with his lifestyle? I can't see it. However, in talking to some people around the industry today, there is a belief that he will not fight September 13th. That doesn't mean he may not fight the rest of the year, but that seems to be gathering more momentum.
Johnny, he's going to fight Khan late in the year.
Hold on. Is that breaking news here, Gabe?
No, it's just I predicted it about a month ago that he wouldn't fight in September and that maybe a little bit before that, but that it would probably be Khan later in the year, but that Floyd would back off of that September date. I fully believe that's going to happen.
Interesting. Steve, we got to get running, okay?
All right, cool. Thanks, guys, and good luck to both of you. I've enjoyed reading you guys for the last couple of years, so, you know, good luck to both.
Well, Steve, listen, we're not going anywhere. We're going to Monday night. Same bat channel. Same bat
time. I know that, but still.
All right, thanks anyway. Here is a tweet from Lightning Chris Salka and Gabe. He asked very simply, what do you credit most of the low pay-per-view numbers this year? Is it streaming, fed-up fans, losing fans? Gabe?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I think, you know, Sean kind of hit it on the head with Floyd. I think that's a pretty valid point. One, you know, the opponents haven't been that scintillating, and Maidana was like, okay, it wasn't even that much of a, you know, the fight was better than what we all expected. So I think the numbers reflected that. But I think above all, it is the glutted market. We keep trying to hit the consumers right in the wallet, and this country hasn't recovered economically. And boxing fans are a typically working class group. Everybody works hard for their cash, and the product does not warrant what the price tag is. It used to be the super fight. It was our Super Bowl. Maybe we'd get two of them a year, but you know, they were warranted, and consequently, there was good fights on the undercard. It just doesn't happen that way anymore, and I think it's just, yeah, it's slowly a combination of all those things, but above all, I think it is the glutted market. There's just too many damn pay-per-views. Can't afford it.
Brian Battaglia talks about Yuri Gamboa. Is he more Casamayor or Ramon Garbay? I would say a little bit more like Casamayor. He's actually done something. Garbay was a complete bust, Gabe.
Yeah, how about, I don't know, Joan Guzman? He kind of reminds me of a guy that just kind of, we all were really high on him. You know, I was never high on Gamboa, but people were kind of big on him. He seemed to have some skills, and he just kind of fell all apart. Now, granted, Gamboa, you know, didn't show up fat, but he backed out of fights, and he just kind of got erratic to the point where his career was put in this position where he's in some other dude's hometown. He should be further along in his career and be, I don't know, a Cuban's number probably going to be a draw, but he, you know, he's going to be something more than he was, and he just wasn't that. All of a sudden, he's being, you know, with a guy that leaves as soon as he hits the ground, you know. Gamboa has some serious questions to ask himself, and the first thing he has to admit is he has 50% as a promoter. That's his first problem.
Gabe, I was right there. I was sitting alongside a writer by the name of Tony Boone, a local writer from Omaha, and Kieran Mulvane of HBO Sports. 50 Cent literally walked right past us because we were in the front row of press row to the bowels of the arena, literally as Gino Rodriguez is waving off the fight. And he kind of had this wry smile like, man, my guy didn't get it done. But anyway, I'll sell some more vitamin water later. I just, you know, I always thought if 50 Cent was going to make a mark in this business, it had to be with Floyd Mayweather. He had to have the money leverage. Once that dissipated for whatever reason, he got stuck with a lot of toxic assets, and it's the old chicken or the egg problem. Do you blame the fighter who doesn't want to fight or the promoter who doesn't really promote for the inactivity? And I do think Yuri Gamboa, to a large degree, died on the vine. Gabe, let's get back to the calls, 347-215-7598.
In the 707, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, fellas? It's Carl.
Carl, what's going on?
Oh, man, not a whole lot, man. I you know what I heard, Steve? I heard that you're going to become Robert Guerrero's coach so Rudy could play on the American Me TV series.
You know, here's the thing. I'm actually going to be Ruben Guerrero's fashion coordinator where I pick out one shirt a month for him to wear at a time.
I heard that, man. Hey, so I guess you answered the question that I had with the last caller about the 13th, September 13th. So you think there's nothing going on that day? Or
here's what I've been told. Within a week or two, because now we're heading into July, tomorrow will be July 1st, within 7 to 10 days, they have to make some sort of proclamation. It's one thing for Golden Boy or Mayweather to say, we have this date. We have this hotel on hold. Guys, there's a pretty important thing called the actual fight that you have to state and declare. Now, maybe I'm not following as closely as other guys. I don't have that type of access with those camps. Are they even negotiating with anybody?
Not that I know of. I haven't heard any sort of name. I haven't, you know, I mean, as I understood it, weren't they going to make some sort of an announcement a few weeks ago? They had said, like, in 2 weeks we'll be making an announcement. I haven't seen the announcement. I think it's kind of like with 50 Cent, the way he started chiding Oscar De La Hoya on Twitter before he had anything on paper. He started acting like he was already owning the Giant, and he really was just getting a tour from the real estate agent, who ended up bailing on him after he signed, you know, his papers. He kind of got stuck with it. And you look at with Floyd and you know, the TMT group, you know, Ellerbe was sitting there saying, we're not going to work with Golden Boy at all. And then the next day, well, maybe in a future fight. And then like a week later or 2 weeks later, it's, well, maybe we will. I think they spoke too soon. I think Oscar, he's looking to take care of business. He's not looking to do anybody favors. He did say he would work with Mayweather and be happy to, but I don't think anybody's really come across the table yet. You know, nobody's picked up the phone. So it's kind of a game of chicken right here.
And Gabe, remember this. It's one thing to do a pay-per-view event, but to actually execute it, it takes a lot of infrastructure. I know everyone thinks it's just easy. It's not. If you go behind the scenes and talk to the people that are working that boiler room every day, their little duties. Right now, Golden Boy is going through some changes. Major players within that office are cleaning out their office as we speak. So, again, the timing just, it's a little bit strange. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow. Hey, who's Matisse with? Is he with Golden Boy or with Al?
Lucas Matisse, I talked to someone that's very high up there with Team Matisse after his fight against John Molina. And he looked me square in the face and he said, we are loyal to Golden Boy.
Well, I would love to see, if that's the case, I would love to see him at Terrence Crawford at 140. That would be beautiful.
You know, I'll say this. Oscar and Bob have pledged to end the Cold War. They both say by the end of the year we're going to do a co-promotion. You know what? There'd be no better way to me to have that happen, to inaugurate that type of event with a fight of that caliber. But again, seeing is believing.
Is believing. Okay, man. You guys enjoy your evening, man. That's all I have for today.
Carl, thank you very much, and say hello to Andre Ward at the local Shoe Palace.
Man, you know what, man? I'm kind of mad, man, that I don't get to see you bash him on Max anymore, man, in writing, man.
You know what, Carl? Don't worry about it. I'll be bashing him at UCN Live starting next week, so don't even worry about that.
That's what's up, man. I'll talk to you soon.
347-215-7598. At the top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
Let me ask you this, actually, before we take a call. Is there a possibility that September date could be saved by that kind of co-promotion? Can they put something like that together, and what would it be?
That's the question.
We still have
to figure out which guys are with Heyman, which guys are with Golden Boy, which guys are with both. And another issue is, it's one thing for Oscar and Bob to be simpatico. If everything's copacetic between those two, okay, what about Bob and Al Heyman?
Yeah, that's going to be a problem. Well, I think Al, that's the thing, is everybody kind of stepped out too soon. If Richard's out of the loop, at least while he's dealing with this lawsuit and stuck with his contract with the, you know, Golden Boy says it last, I think, was it March 2018? Al's going to have to figure some things out because he needs some vendors, man. He's got a lot of product, so no way to move it. Is Ludabella going to be turning it out for him, or Gary Shaw or Goosen, the way that he's been able to? I'm not sure, but he's got a lot of people. He doesn't have a promoter to use anymore. It isn't Mayweather. They don't have the infrastructure. They don't even have a license to promote. So, I mean, at some point, all that leverage and everything that he's bought, what's he going to do with it? He's going to have somebody.
The scuttlebutt in the industry is that Al Heyman is going to various networks basically saying, not only will I buy my own airtime, I will pay for the production. And it's bizarre. Gabe, now he's signing guys like Miguel Vasquez and Vonis Martirosyan. There's not exactly a bidding war for these guys. So, and there's always been that theory that maybe he's trying to monopolize all of boxing by not only taking out the marquee attractions, but getting the B-sides, the C-sides, the opponents, and cannon fodder, who don't have much upside, where in essence he can create his own league. But with that league, like you said, Gabe, he needs an outlet.
He needs a promoter's license, and he can't do that because of the Ali Act. So what's
well,
he going to do?
Well, he's never
heard
about
really
that before, Gabe. Gabe, that's never been a hindrance to the way he's well, done business, has it?
As long as he's had enablers, yeah. You know, I'm just curious. You know, is Lou DiBello going to be his guy? You know, continue to be? You know, I don't know. It's that's the big thing. 714, you're live on the next round.
Hello, 714. Boom, we have a knockdown here, Gabe.
Let's go with 1111. It's like a Skype or a blocked number. You're live on the next round.
Uh-oh. We're going Yuri Gamboa here, Gabe.
in the 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? It's CT.
Oh, CT, we can always count on you. You never get knocked down.
Hey, I want to talk about the Crawford and Gamboa fight. Me being a Gamboa fan, it was very difficult for me to watch that. But I knew from the beginning Crawford is definitely truly talented. And I really think, I'm not trying, you know, I give Crawford all the credit, but I really think Gamboa should have never been at 135. I noticed right when he turned softball, I knew the fight was over. You could see it instantly. Gamboa was totally like, you know, he couldn't make adjustments to that southpaw skin. And it was just, it was all Crawford from there. That tech right hook just came perfectly. I think Crawford needed to catch up to Gamboa's speed. And then once he turned southpaw, it was on from there. I think Crawford did very well. And I think Gamboa definitely needs to be down, like, in a lower weight class, if he can make it.
See, do you know one thing that they need to do with Gamboa is trot him out there more than once a year. Boxing is such a game of timing and precision. Yeah, I know about Ray Leonard taking off 2.5-3 years to face Marvin Hagler, but that's an anomaly. And I know Mayweather for a time would fight once a year. And literally for him, it was like riding a bike. Gamboa, for as talented as he is athletically, there are fundamental flaws that he's never really fixed. And I kind of feel bad for him in a sense because I know what Gabe's point is. He did it to himself, but I also think that he was enabled to a point where he didn't know any better. And I thought once Crawford went southpaw, I was with you, CT, because when he landed that right hook, you said, ooh, not only can he catch him with that punch because he's so long and tall, he's very precise with it. I've always been impressed, CT, with Crawford's ability to actually switch hit. There's a lot of guys that try to fight from both sides of the plate. Crawford may be the most effective guy that can actually pull it off for long stretches.
It's a rare thing to see a guy do that, you know, and he doesn't even become a completely different fighter. Some guys, you know, are a little more rigid when they're one side and then they're a little more fluid on the other. He seems to just kind of mirror himself, and it's like, let me just get a different angle on this. So that was hilarious. Roy Jones did the long-form version of the Emmanuel Stewart. This fight's going exactly as I thought it was. At first it was, why is he turning southpaw? Dumbest thing I've ever seen. And then, you know, by the end of the fight, like, you know, he's cleaning up. He's the greatest switch hitter since Marvin Hagler. You know, Roy, you know, I want to stop nagging the HBO crew, but they just won't let me. But I think Crawford, you know, I loved that ability. I thought it was not, you know, sometimes you see a guy switch hit, and it's a desperate move. I'm getting hit over here. I don't know what the hell to do. It's almost a capitulation. But with him, it was a tactic. He stayed really poised. That's why HBO, they didn't call the fight. They were calling something else. I don't know what it was. But I thought he was poised even in kind of losing those first three rounds. And even when he got hurt, he got wobbled. He didn't really get hit again very much. Certainly not like two, three times in a row. He slowed the game down for like 2 minutes, and then he finished this guy off. Masterful performance.
TC, being a Gamboa fight, if you could make a fight with Mikey Garcia at 130, would you still be interested in watching that matchup?
Yes.
Hmm.
I think it would be a tough fight for Gamboa coming off this loss, but I would definitely watch it. If I can point out the fighters that they put inside the boxes in the beginning of the fight, I definitely believe, and I've always thought this, I think Miguel Vasquez would definitely be a great fight for Crawford. I think it would be very competitive out of all the guys that they've shown.
But TC, be honest, do you really want to see Miguel Vasquez?
No, I mean, I think it would be one of those, you know, snoozer-type fights, like everybody, you know. But I think as far as, like, the top 135 pounders, I think those two are definitely, even though it wouldn't be you know, the best fight to see, like, spark excitement. I think those two, to me.
Well, just remember this, though, Gabe. Now that he's with Miguel Vasquez, I could argue that Al Haymon did Top Rank, Cameron Duncan, and Terrence Crawford a huge favor. Because let's face it, as of now, with the current constructs of the business, that matchup is a non-starter.
Yeah, you know, and you can argue that you know, Max, I think Max Kellerman said he's like the undisputed champ, Terrence Crawford. And there is Mikey Garcia, but I got to be honest, you know, I would rather watch, like, a Donaire Rigondeaux over and over and over again all day than watch another Mikey Garcia fight, you know, or the upside down
really?
Vasquez fight. Miguel Vasquez bores me to tears.
No, he's agony, but Mikey Garcia,
Mikey Garcia doesn't do anything for me either.
Well, Mikey Garcia, here's the thing. I think he's a lot like a young Marquez. I think if you don't pitch him fastballs in certain styles where he cannot chase, he's not good at initiating. But over the course of time, he figures guys out. But you know what? Let's not talk about retired fighters like Mikey Garcia now that I think about it.
Yeah, and Mikey just doesn't do a lot for me. At first, I thought it would be good. But, I mean, getting to the knockout is like watching paint dry. And I just, you know, I have better things to do. Yeah, I like action fighters. I guess I'm a bloodthirsty savage, you know, because I'm not, you know, into the total defensive specialist. I liked Rigo because he was combining defense with a potent offense, and then it kind of leveled off. But it always does at the top level for most guys. But, yeah, neither of those guys. Al did us a big favor. Have Adam.
TC, anything we do for you? Anything else?
Yeah, just one more thing. If I could touch on the All Access, I pretty much enjoyed the All Access between Laura and Canelo. And the more I watched it, I really felt for Laura. You can see the emotion in this guy's voice. You know, he really wants this fight. And I think it was unfair the way they were putting inside the episode where what she did was wrong. It's almost like she was disrespecting Canelo. I mean, all great fighters, they want that fight with that number one contender. Like, you know, he feels like he's the best. I feel like what he did was appropriate. You know, you get on stage. If you don't get the fight, you got to do that sometimes. And you can tell by all the things he's been through in life, the way he had to come from Cuba and stuff like that. He's very hungry. You could see it in his emotion, the way he talks. And I think he's you know, everybody's talking about Canelo and Cotto right away. And, you know, Lawrence, he's one of the best fighters in boxing. I don't think everybody should, you know, I don't think anybody should overlook this guy. And he can definitely end up being Canelo. I know the cards are stacked against him as far as, you know, Canelo being the star, and it's hard to, you know, win also being a boxer against Canelo. We saw with Trout. But I'm pulling for Lawrence in this fight.
Okay. CT, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
We have about another half hour to go here on the next round. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at SteveMaxBoxing or at Gabriel_Montoya. And we'll go back to the phone lines if you want to jump in. We have some phone lines open. That number, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's go through some news and notes here. The August 9th triple header on Showtime. Gabe, let's just go through this card. Danny Garcia versus Lightning Rod Salka. Lamont Peterson versus Edgar Santana. Danny Jacobs versus Jared Fletcher. Your thoughts?
Well, Danny's going to get his belt. Could be an exciting fight, but, oh, God, I'm running out of steam already. You know, Rod Salka, I don't – this should have been the fight that they did with Herrera. And to me, what it says – people are saying, you know, Danny's ripping off the fans. I mean, he gave his Matisse fight. He's fought good people before. You know, Mir Khan, people can be hindsight all they want, but people were picking against Danny Garcia in that fight.
Yep.
This fight, though, you know, if you're going to do a homecoming in Puerto Rico and build on something, you know, that's an island full of exciting fighters. Not just great champions, but they were pleasing to the eye. You should have put Rod Salka in there with him for that one. You know, do a little island sacrifice and introduce yourself to everybody. So they went with Herrera, a cagey vet, terrible matchmaking, and he looked like crap, and everybody thinks he lost the fight, including myself. I think that left him mentally shaky. If he was shaky before and he's probably having trouble making weight in that fight, which he looked like, it's even worse now. I think he knows that he got beat. And so they're hoping that Salka will be a salve of some kind. The Santana-Peterson fight, though, that's an interesting fight just because Edgar Santana is kind of an interesting guy. He was kind of a promising fighter, and then he goes away to the joint for drug charges. But he's, you know, 29-0, you know, 4 losses, but, you know, 20 KOs. I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying he can win, but he does bring heavy hands, and he's got something of a high boxing IQ. If he, you know, it's just that I mean, he's got Josecito Lopez on, you know, back in 2008 before his break for incarceration. That was his last win. So I don't know. He's kind of a trippy dude. It's a funky fight, but it could be actually an entertaining, fun fight. I enjoyed Santana's last. That's about all I got for that fight.
Here's the thing. Anything can happen. Like, a lot of people didn't like the show in April with Matisse Molina, and I'll give myself some credit, and I'm completely tooting my own horn. I said that's a dangerous fight for Lucas Matisse, and right now, that might be the best fight on premium cable that we've had in 2014. I'd still rate that one above what we saw this past weekend in Omaha, because I've had a little bit more two-way action. June 21st show a couple weeks ago, I liked that show coming in. I did not really rip it. I didn't criticize it. I actually thought that's a fun fight fans type of card. This one here, though, Gabe, Ron Salka, he beat Louis Colada on Showbox. But here's the reality. He's really a 130-pounder, has very little power. And the issue that I'm having with this in terms of Danny Garcia, Lamont Peterson saying, well, it's a prelude. So in other words, their past fights where they fought Thierry Jean, solid contender, and Mauricio Herrera, who's a very solid fighter, who I also really like, turns out that those fights were a prelude to a prelude. Now, Golden Boy, especially when they were with Richard Schaefer, always prided themselves on not marinating. In other words, they were the anti-top rank, which is fine. But Peterson-Garcia, I love that fight. But all it's ever going to be is a Showtime-level fight. You're not building it up to be a pay-per-view. Hopefully not. But I just don't understand it. Wasn't it the storyline that Danny Garcia, when he fought Herrera, Gabe, but this was his last fight at 140, and then we're going to do a tune-up as he embarks on his run at 47, then eventually gets in the mix for Mayweather. I guess they changed their minds?
Well, I guess this goes back to the question on everybody's mind is who's with who. I know Peterson's with Golden Boy, right? Danny's a Heyman guy, but I thought he started as a Golden Boy guy. I don't know if his contract ran out or if he was ever had a contract. I always thought he did. So in the light of the way everything's shifting, do you really want to put your pieces together like that and cancel one out, or do you want to try to dilute, you know, your what you have and stretch it a little bit, because you don't know what you're going to need to build for it in the future. If Al's buying out all the talent, but these are two of the Golden Boy pieces, you know, maybe that's the thinking. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. But it's just crazy to me that Showtime is all good with it. You know, this is on paper just a total showcase card. You know, it's going to get Danny against, you know, Jared Fletcher, who's like 30 years old, no real wins of note, one loss. It was a knockout loss, 18, you know, wins but 10 knockouts. I mean, it's just you just kind of wonder what is this, you know? It's a strange card. I'm putting as good a spin as I could for no real reason other than...
Well, you're just an Al Heyman homer. There's no doubt about that, Gabe. I mean, that's been apparent for years. You know, but seriously,
I'm on the
take. This is such a bad card. I'm wondering if Kerry Davis and Ross Greenberg are running Showtime, because this is a complete tail wag dog situation. There's no doubt. I don't blame Al Heyman. His job is to get the most amount of money or the least amount of risk for his clients. It is the job of Showtime, led by Steven Espinoza, a guy that I respect. I have good relations with them. But this card here, you look at, I mean, those other two cards at the Home Depot Center last month or two, I found ways to say, I kind of like this card. It's not as bad as this one here, Gabe. It's tough. And the reaction on Twitter and social media, I think, really said it all. And sometimes certain things will be able to live past low expectations. Sometimes low expectations are very, very accurate. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
I mean, yeah, this card is as suspect as 50 Cent's early signings. It's 585. You're live on the next round. 585.
I'm right here.
Oh, hey.
I noticed on the HBO broadcast, it was especially noticeable on Saturday how badly Matt Herman has rigged in his job as an announcer. You know, he's saying, oh, there's an announced crowd of 10,900, but it feels like 12,000. He's just constantly selling out, it seems, and just being completely fake. Well, I mean, what do you guys think?
Gabe, you want to take this?
Well, as the president of the Max Kellerman fan club, I take exception at your take. No, I thought Max... every week, Max gives me things to just write down because he just... I just never know what he's seeing. He made a very telling comment. It was middle of the beginning of the fight, like third round, second round, somewhere in there. And Lampley was saying, you know, these guys are so fast, I don't know whose punches to call, which I've actually always thought was a weakness of his, that he always kind of calls towards the house fighter, the guy he's staring at, rather than staring in between him and seeing them both. And Max says, just pick one and go with it, basically. And I tend to think that that's exactly how he watches fights. He picks one guy to either harp on what they're not doing and he'd like to see, or he picks on one guy to talk about and just kind of ignores what they're actually doing and just talks about some fantasy version of them. This fight was just like talking about the fight itself as he got deep into it. He said this fight went from Crawford getting outclassed to Gamboa getting beat up. And I was like, if you guys remove all the side talk that they do during all three of them, Roy Jones, Kellerman, and Lampley, when they get together, they kind of banter about a bunch of other stuff other than really what's going on at the moment. Just call the fight. And if you pause and let a little dead air happen every now and again so you're watching and actually taking in information that you can spit back out in an intelligent fashion, it would actually serve us all a lot better. And somebody please fire Steve Weisfeld. He's completely useless.
I know Steve Weisfeld very well. He's a very friendly guy. Here's the problem. Someone has got to clean up and teach him how to be a broadcaster. And the greatest thing about Harold Letterman, and listen, I'm longtime friends with Harold. Maybe I'm biased. But whether you agree or disagree with Harold Letterman's scorecard, his delivery is awesome. Just the way he starts with, Jim, let me tell you. And he gets you into it. Like, you want to hear what he has to say. Steve Weisfeld needs to improve, and someone's got to tell him, Steve, it's not sometimes what you say, it's how you say it. Because we are, again, he is now in the broadcast world. And it's a night and day difference between him and Harold Letterman. Now, as for Max, listen, Max is in a very, very tough spot. First of all, he had to replace Larry Legend Merchant. And it's a very tough job. If any of us did it, half the people would hate us, the other people would like us. It's like being the president of the United States. No matter what you do, a large segment is still going to think you're the worst ever. I do think that broadcast crew, and I still think they're very good, they do sometimes have an agenda. And they keep telling me that they don't, but there are certain nights that I listen to them that my slanted eyes roll and I go, really, guys? Really?
Yeah, he tries too hard to anoint the next guy instead of just letting things take their course. Like, a good fight speaks for itself. This fight spoke for itself. It was Gamboa, you know, kind of came up short, but we found out that he has heart and that he's willing to get in there and bang. We also found out he's kind of inexperienced. The amount of times he's been knocked down, he sure pops right back up too fast. Doesn't really gather himself and maybe save himself for later. He's so flawed. And I think, you know, we all have to make those observations for ourselves because those guys are too busy trying to figure out which animal they are, a snake or a cat. It's a lot of nonsense. I think Jim is still like a very viable anchor. He's still experienced. He knows the game, but I think he's saddled with idiots, and I think it hurts the broadcast.
But you don't want to be too critical or harsh, Gabe. Let me ask this caller one question. Were you someone that liked or disliked Larry Merchant, and when he, quote-unquote, walked off into the sunset, did you feel as though it was time for a change with Mr. Merchant on HBO?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I'm asking you.
Oh,
did you think you would miss Larry Merchant?
I do miss him now, but at the time I thought that maybe he should have been shown the door, yeah.
Mm. I think your thoughts echo many others. I mean, Larry came over to us, me and Kieran Mulvaney, he had gotten off the air, he takes off his headsets, and he comes over. He delivered two lines that were so good. Now, I don't know if he said them on the air during the international broadcast, but he said, A, people talk about pressure, and he was talking about Crawford. He said, pressure is opportunity when you're good. What a brilliant line. Then he also said, finding a fighter like Crawford in Omaha is like finding an orchid in the North Pole. And those are the type of things where Larry Mitchell didn't say a lot, but with Larry, less is more. And I think that's where Kellerman, Max, is having a problem wrapping things up in a tight bow the way Merchant could.
It's, you know, you look at it, and people try to ape this on Twitter with everybody trying to be the funny guy. And he had such that kind of, it's like a homicide detective, Larry. That's how beat writers are in boxing, at least the old school that he's from is. And Steve, I think you're very much a throwback to this because you kind of are a bridge in between those guys and the present. And you could hear those lines, and you could almost picture Larry not looking up from his typewriter, but kind of, you know, be saying that as he's typing and then looking at the ring. That's the old school. Those are the old ways. And Max, he'll never be that for me. He's not a beat reporter. He could talk to the fighters all he wants and love boxing all he wants, but he's never going to be that guy. I'm never going to take his opinion seriously, no matter how much access he's got. He just give me a beat reporter. And, you know, I mean, we're partners on, you know, on the show, but I still lobby for you. I think that that's a job that you should have. You're a throwback to that guy. I watch this stuff, and it's all just trying too hard. It's like, dude, you're not a writer. You're a dude that likes fights that ended up getting on HBO somehow.
You know, I'll say this. The word I'm critical of Max is the overbearing praise and the blindness towards Andre Ward. And it has nothing to do with his fighting ability, but the fact he still thinks Andre's like this upstanding guy. And I don't think he is. And I think that the network is in the Andre Ward business, and now that he's a co-worker of theirs, they can't give you an honest opinion of Andre Ward and what is happening to his career. That's where I think I have the most objection to what's going on with the HBO broadcast crew. Listen, we got to get running. Thanks for the call, okay?
Yeah, thanks.
If you want to call in, we still have about 19 minutes, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next on deck?
In the 951, you're live on the next round.
Hey, peace.
Yes, who is this?
This is Dave. Hey, I got a situation, man. I like the drug test with Sean Porter fight coming up in September, but I don't think people understand how hard them boys work. And, Steve, I met you at Wildcard when they first came out here, so, and you got to remember he was at 165. And he was a boxer then. He's mauling people now, and people thinking he owns something. But they want to be great, and I hope they can test year-round.
Dave, let me just say this. I've always said this. Like Gabe, if you're a championship-level fighter, I think you can't trust those who regulate. They're not doing a good job at it, and the promoters themselves are too economically tied in. And he's at that stage now that he should voluntarily say, I'm going to do VADA 24-7, 365, And I've said this to Victor Conte, who's a friend of mine. I said, Victor, because of your past, you've admitted it, but you know there's a stain. Some people will never forgive or forget. All of your clients should be put in Nevada just to protect everybody. And as for Sean Porter, there's no doubt about it. Kenny Porter has done a marvelous job, not only being a trainer, but a father and shepherding this thing.
He's
exceeded my expectations. I thought he'd be a decent guy, but the last couple of fights – as that one song says, he's done growing up like Rudy Huxtable.
Right.
I agree with you, though. I don't think drug testing is actually the thing holding it up. I mean, I've been kind of following it, and to me, and I 100% agree with your sentiment, Steve, regards to Porter, top-level fighters, and particularly, you know, if you have a past like a Memo Heredia or a Victor Conte, regardless of what we feel what they're doing in the present, part of their brand has to be that atonement and that transparency. For my guys, they're tested all year round at the highest level, and they're clean. But, you know, I think with Porter, you know, what I heard was that they barely got the contracts a few days ago, and they're still working it out. I tend not to think that the drug testing is the problem. I think it's just the way fights get put together, and they're putting pressure And I think putting the drug testing in the press like that is, one, a good tactic, but I think it's now becoming more commonplace to make sure that it happens and that the public knows, hey, this is something we want, and we're not going to stop until we get it. I think it's all good. I think it'll happen, too. I think we'll do drug testing.
Yeah, well, I know it'll happen. I know they're good, upstanding people, and like I said, they work hard. I know how hard they work.
Do.
They work real hard, and they really want it. So, and then I don't think people understand how good Sean really is. Because they're looking at the style now, but they got to remember when he was 165 and he was boxing these boys. So his style is so versatile that I think he can go far. We don't know. Anything can happen in boxing, but I think they got a good start. And I'm gone on that note.
I think so,
too. All right. Thank you very much. And from what I understand, and in dealing with the IBF and talking to them, they're led by Daryl Peoples, Gabe, they say what you want about them, and they don't make every ranking that I look at, that's solid. There's some stuff that I disagree with. But as it relates to their eliminators, their mandatories, and the fact you got to make your defenses within a certain amount of time, they don't bend. So this fight has to happen by early September, and I'm hearing a couple of dates. I think that fight will happen. Unfortunately, we all thought it would lead on August 9th, a much better triple header than we have now on Showtime.
Yeah, that's... maybe that's ultimately the reason that that fight's kind of fell apart, and we're stuck with that. You know, I'm just glad I'm not deadline ready reporting it. I only have to view it. I don't have to read it in print.
Gabe,
we still have a few calls left. You know,
let's go.
Anybody up? All right. In the 661, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe and Steve, how you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Hey, Gabe, have you gone to the dark side? I see you're covering MMA now, a.k.a. the Tomato Can League.
No, man, no. I cover drugs and combat sports, you know, and so that's, you know, you're not going to see me doing any MMA fight reports. I love a good fight, you know, and so I do enjoy watching it every once in a while with the styles of writer. They're people that I've seen and I want to see fight, but no, you're not going to see me going over to the other side. I'm interested in the drug users and the reform for that sport. I think they're both going to pertain to each other. I think the rules are going to work with each other. I think there's a lot of things that both sides are doing that need to change, and particularly the making weight, education about hydration and starvation, all that stuff needs to change, and the drug testing. So it's kind of, I look at a lot of different sports with this subject, tennis, cycling, the NFL, baseball, to kind of learn more about the subject and how everybody does it. So don't worry, man. I'm a boxing guy, and I always will be.
I guess that's all
you
have to say.
All right. That's that. Let me see what I got here. Some people kind of hung up. In the 347, no, you're gone. Did we do 714? I think we have one more. In the 714, you're live on the next round. 714.
Oh, it looks like a knockdown.
Bang. Well, I think we are heading towards the finish.
Yeah, Gabe, let's go through a couple of fights that happened on Friday night. Errol Spence with a whitewash in 10 rounds over Ronald Cruz, improving to 13-0. Gabe, if there's anyone from the Heyman Olympic Hall of 2012 that I'd buy stock in, I think it'd be this guy. I think this guy already looks like a seasoned pro. He just seems to have that look of a guy going places.
Doesn't he, though? I'm really high on Errol. I think we're just heading into the Olympics. I was watching him and just feeling like he was going to be the guy that would do something impressive. And boy, he just looks like he's ready to go towards championship status. But now I need to see some adversity. You know, he went rounds, and I like that. But I thought that's what this fight was really for, was to extend him, see if he could finish off a guy that was supposed to be durable. But you know, he needs opposition now. He needs to be tested. He needs to be put in that fight where you're not quite sure. You know, not the full deep end of the pool, but maybe somebody with some pop. Maybe not the slowest guy, but a little experience with some power. and some durability to see how he handles that. But I really like what I see. He's headed towards a, you know, he's going to be a champion before anybody in that class.
He looks like a guy that could already go long distances against seasoned fighters. And what I love about him, he has what you would call a windshield wiper attack. It's left, right, up, and down, and steady. Goes to the body, has a wide variety of punches. He could work on the inside, and he can certainly box a little bit from the perimeter. Probably the one thing he lacks is what I would call true knockout power. But you know what? At the end of the day, if you're well-rounded, that can be overcome. And Gabe, Ivan Redkach against Sergey Golyakovich. Gabe, this was awful matchmaking. I know Ivan Redkach is limited, but if you put him in with a certain style, he makes for good TV. This is a classic case of choosing a record over an actual style of the fight, and we as the audience, we suffered for it.
Yeah, I was like, what God did I offend? What's up with this? You know, it's Friday, for God's sakes. You know, I was like, thank God for Errol Spence, you know, in the one-sided, at least good matchmaking. Brutal, you know, I just, Redkach is a guy that needs to be, you know, I guess it might be a fight that comes in handy down the line, but he's just a bit slow-footed, you know, and he doesn't really cut off the ring particularly well, but he also had a weird, squirrely style in front of him, a guy that wasn't fully committing to his punches. Was just moving about, you know, all herky-jerky and crazy. Yeah, I don't know who made this fight. I think this fight got kind of forced on them a little bit, talking to people that close to, you know, Redkach. I just don't understand it. Why would you put this on TV? Why would you make this guy fight this fight? The only thing that can positive I can come out of it is, well, two. One, that the fight's over and I don't have to watch it again, but that maybe the lessons learned from chasing a guy all night will have some sort of effect on Redkach.
Gabe, I understand we have a late caller here. Want to try to punch him up?
Yeah, in the 480, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Jimmy from Arizona. How you doing?
Jimmy, what is going on?
I just wanted to call in, man. This is a good show. Obviously, a lot going on in the boxing world for everybody and some good stuff for both of you guys. So I just wanted to get a quick call in. But I also wanted to talk about, Steve, you really did something that I didn't think could be done. And what I mean by that is you made Omaha look like a bucket list now. Completely.
No, it is. I got to tell you, the old market area is amazing. There's stuff to do. And if you bring your kids out there, there's this place called Hollywood Candy, which sells a lot of candy, but it has a lot of trinkets. And even at our age, it brings out the kid in you. There's bars out there. There's restaurants. The people are nice. Stay at the Omaha Hilton. And also, of course, I would never partake. There's also a Spearmint Rhino in Omaha. Just saying, you know.
I saw the pictures on the candy, and I got to tell you, that looked just we kept looking at them over and over again, but just everything about it just really looked like you said, it's, you turned something into a bucket list that I don't think would be. And then the fight delivered. Then the fight completely delivered. So it was just a win-win situation. I just had to call in and bring that point across.
Well, Jimmy, one day, me, you, and Leah, we're going to be doing toasting Grey Goose and soda at the Omaha. We'll go to the Parliament Pub. I like that place.
That definitely sounds like a bucket list.
All right. Jimmy, listen, as always, thanks for listening, okay?
Thanks, you guys. You guys take care.
Mm-hmm. And wait a minute. We got this guy that says he's on the line, Rob Riddler. Have you punched him up yet?
I'm trying to figure out which one he is, and I think this is him. In the 714, you're live for the next round. Rob, is that you? 714.
I don't think so, Gabe. Try again.
Man. He says he just called. Well, I'll try the 860. You're live on the next round.
And that's me.
Boom. Hey, Mr. Riddler. Welcome to the next round.
First time for me. Been hearing about it on the Twitter feed. Had to call in. I'm going to throw some haterade out here because I couldn't
wait
until Thursday.
Uh-oh.
Clearly you're in the ring.
Uh-oh.
No, not that much haterade, though. Terrence Crawford. I'm not going to hate on him. Gamboa went in there with a lot of disadvantages. Despite those disadvantages, I thought Gamboa was going to pull off the win. Looked early in the fight like he was, the way he was kind of just hitting Crawford at will. Defense wasn't impressing me from Crawford. It didn't really seem like he had a game plan, and it kind of unraveled when Gamboa did the typical get sloppy and get caught. it was more Gamboa's undoing than it was Crawford's, you know, doing, if I could say that. He reminds me of kind of like Danny Garcia of the lightweight division. I don't really see him, except Danny Garcia in the light welterweight division is a jam-packed division of talent, whereas lightweight, I see Edner Cherry in the top 10 still, so I don't even know what that's about. Yeah, Edner Cherry, no.
I think you're short-shrifting Crawford a little bit. I don't think this was just about him landing a lottery punch. I mean, we've seen him fight effectively southpaw, and he even said after the fight, I know the way this guy drops his left, that the right hook would be there. I don't think that was just by accident. I do think, listen, was he having problems early on with the speed and quickness of Gamboa? Yes, but Rob, that's been the history. That's when Gamboa is his most spectacular.
But it was just, it wasn't so much, you know, it was, obviously Crawford, you know, I'm not going to say he was the first fighter to ever, like, throw a punch and it landed. And, you know, we've seen Danny Garcia make a career out of it. But Danny Garcia, the reason they resemble a lot to me is because it seems like they get matched up very well. But the thing is, Danny Garcia did take the fight against that Argentine fighter, Lucas Nathise, so I can't really hate on Danny too much, even though I despise his soul.
what did Swift do to you, Rob?
Danny Garcia needs to, you know, needs to be the first, you know, human life contact with a black hole. That's what needs to happen.
Wow!
But, nah, Terrence Crawford, you know, he looked like he has skills. He looked like, you know, but there was a lot of things that weren't impressing me. Given all the advantages he had going into that fight with height, reach, weight, age, and, you know, being the champion, being in his hometown, those are a lot of advantages that would make somebody be a favorite in a fight most of the time. And it was just something that really wasn't that impressive to me, given that, like you said earlier in the show, a lot of guys that are no names have knocked Garin Gamboa down, and it just took a bigger guy. I think it was also that, too. Gamboa had been knocked down, but he had never been knocked down by somebody that was poised and ready to counter and stuff like that, and had the weight going for them where they could just throw weight behind their punches regardless. But if Terrence Crawford was to move up, which I hear, which they were like talking, I think Kellerman or somebody was talking about that, I got the Larry Merchant stream for like 15 minutes and then I turned that off. Oh, I'm sorry, radio. I was listening to Larry Merchant on the radio. Terrible. Larry Merchant was, oh my God. Now I know why they got rid of him on HBO. For the Max Kellerman, who knows how long they're going to keep him on there. Max Kellerman is, you know, the Tarzan of nut-hugging. So it was a good fight. It was a good fight, but I definitely want to see Terrence Crawford move up. Maybe Adrian Broner move back down to lightweight.
Listen, I'll say this, though, Gabe. Before we crown him and slam the table and walk off like Dennis Green, I think the caller makes a point. This is just a big step for Terrence Crawford. Again, he's been matched very well by Top Rank, as is usual. And this was like his first real fight on HBO. But I'll say this, the guy took Greatest Prescott, a big guy that's like a welterweight, on short notice and outboxed him. I think there's something about Terrence Crawford, the stability he brings, Gabe, that I trust.
He's a tactician. I loved, you know, he adapted. That's a great way of putting it. He completely just, I don't know if he had a game plan or not, but I mean, whatever was working in the beginning wasn't. How often do you see somebody just completely change it up and stick with that, you know? And it was interesting. In the ninth, he switched back to righty. He got clipped right away. That's what got him hurt. Boom. And it was on the switch back to southpaw that his legs buckled and Max Kellerman wet his pants. I think that it's just poor Max is getting killed here. But, I think that this guy's got depth. And that's what we found here. But to look at the matchmaking correctly, it is kind of like what I'm talking about with Errol Spence. He was fighting a shorter guy with short arms that was recognizable to the audience, but he hadn't fought in a year. That's a great top-ranked tactic. They use it a few times with Oscar De La Hoya, like Corte. So they got him at the right time. They really took advantage of 50 Cent, I thought, in this. And it is a guy that supposed to beat in this sense. So we'll find out in the fight when he's really perfectly matched with a guy his size that maybe he could beat him, like a unification type of match. But I think he's the goods. I think his character's strong. He's not going to flame out like a Pavlik or fall apart like a Jermaine Taylor. I think he's going to be a guy you can build in that region and for a long time to come.
Ron, we got to get running, okay?
Yeah, no doubt.
Thank you very much. All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of the Next Round. I just want everyone to know, we're doing this show. We're not going anywhere. Starting next week, I'll be at the Undisputed Champion Network or UCNLive.com. Just want to make everyone aware of this point. From this point forward, Gabe Montoya and I are still doing the Next Round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. So with that being said, on behalf of Gabe Montoya and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring radio network, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.